Welcome to episode 12 of Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Adaban Cipher, and my latest, The Maven and Reed Mystery Series. And I'm here with my co-host, the inimitable Megan Daly, celebrity teacher librarian, blogger at Children's Books Daily, and author of Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. Megan and I, along with our good friend, author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. We would love to have you in our conversations. So, before we begin our new conversation, what is happening in the Kingdom of Megan this week, Megan Daly?
Ooh, the Kingdom of Megan. I like that. That's really great. Do I get to be the queen?
You are the queen. Queen Megan.
Why does nobody recognize me as the queen here? So tomorrow is Chickpea's 10th birthday. Ooh. And so I've been sort of wrapping her presents and so forth. She is obviously getting some books. One of them is Twitch by M.G. Leonard, which I talked about on the last episode.
Yes.
Yeah, because as mentioned previously, she is a bit of a Twitcher. And so she is getting that book. And the beekeeper actually found her present from us, part of her present, which is this gorgeous handmade bag that he found in this art shop we rather like in Brisbane, the name of which I cannot think of at the moment, but it's great. Green Tangerine at Paddington. We go there quite a lot and look at all of the beautiful things. And it is a bag which has got a satchel bag, which has got a kookaburra all over the front of it, a hand-painted kookaburra. It is amazing. And Chickpea's beautiful father, his favourite bird was the kookaburra. So she will absolutely love that bag. And we got her a few other bits and pieces. And she does tend to get nature-inspired gifts because she's just a little scientist, outdoor-loving person, also a very big reader. For Christmas, the beekeeper's father got her a taxidermy kit.
Are you kidding me? Taxidermy? No.
Yeah, well, he is an entomologist, now a beekeeper, and he has helped her pin some insects. And so Christmas was all about pinning insect type gifts, which is odd. And this year for her birthday, it's all about the birds.
She's a funny stick, isn't she?
She is a funny little thing. And the small bee is turning 8 in a couple of weeks. And he is, we are doing a combined birthday party for them. So the beekeeper has a very large extended family, as do I. And we are so busy at the moment that we've decided we literally cannot cope with two birthday parties. And Chickpea actually doesn't like friend birthday parties. She finds them a little overwhelming. So we're having a rather large combined family party for the small bee and Chickpea at a local nature reserve, and we're going to do some bushwalking and all of the fun things. So that is what I am focused on this week. What about you?
Wow. I'm just trying to get my head around all of that stuff. Do you know, we've actually got quite a lot of international listeners. And for those international listeners, I feel like we should explain the kookaburra a little bit.
Don't ask me to make the sound.
No, I'm not going to ask you, because the kookaburra makes the call of the kookaburra is like a very high-pitched laugh in the cackle. Bush. It's like a cackle. And if you didn't know what it was, I would imagine that it would possibly like have you running for the nearest tree in an attempt to either hide behind it or climb up it. But the thing about kookaburras is they're actually enormous birds. They are enormous birds. We have quite a few, as we discussed last week at length, we used to have quite a lot of bird activity in my large garden that I am still missing and probably will miss forevermore. We had a lot of kookaburras, and they used to come and just sit on our sort of paling fence outside the sunroom window. And when you get up close to them, they are huge.
They are.
And I'd imagine for smaller birds, they're probably quite terrifying. I feel like we should probably put a little picture.
Absolutely.
Of a kookaburra.
Have you ever seen one kill a snake? They're quite violent things as well. Like those big
aggressive.
Beaks.
Yeah, they're aggressive
and they slap the snake they're trying to eat on the ground. They are quite a large, as you say, large bird and a little bit intimidating. But I also do love the way they just sort of sit and look at you. We've got one that sits on the streetlight outside our house and it's just literally always sitting there looking at us in the afternoons.
Supervising.
Yeah, supervising.
That's fantastic. Well, I will not be celebrating any birthdays. Oh, no, that's a lie. I am celebrating a birthday this week.
Oh, who'd you forget?
Well, no, I didn't forget. I just forgot that I was going to talk about it. It's the builder's birthday. It's been hard to forget his birthday because he's actually in the same house as me. So it's his birthday this week. He is not getting books this year. I usually give him books. I like to, you know, keep his reading up for him. But because we've been in the process of moving house, like bringing
need anything else.
We just put that on hold for the time being. However, I have bought him a couple of records. He's got he's got quite the collection of vinyl. He's collecting his vinyl again because we have the record player, which we've had for a couple of years again now. But he used to have, apparently, allegedly, although Book Boy and I both think that he's mistaken about this, but he reckons he had Paul Kelly's Gossip album on vinyl and that it's been lost. And we're like, no, you had it on cassette. Because we specifically remember the cassette. And we're like, no, you had it on cassette. Anyway, to kind of forestall any further argument about where this lost record could possibly be, I just bought him another one. They reissued it and I have purchased the new album. But anyway, we are not here to talk about the builder's, you know, extensive vinyl collection. We are here to talk about books. Now, I've got no book mail this week because moving house, somewhere along the way, everything's got lost in the mail. I've got no mail at all this week of any kind, which is, I've got to tell you, not a bad thing. Like I'm okay with it, not having sort of like a whole lot of stuff land on me all the time.
But you need no more possessions in your life at the moment.
I don't, but I am missing the book mail, so I'm hoping that that will kind of sort itself out by next week. But I'm sure you've got some because I know that you are, as well as being the queen of the Kingdom of Megan, you are also the queen of book mail. So what have you got for us?
Okay, I do indeed have quite a few that I'll share with you.
Excellent.
So it's good really that you don't have any this week. First one I want to talk about is The Underdogs, Catch a Cat Burglar, written by Kate and Joel Temple and illustrated by Shiloh Gordon. Now, I love everything that Kate Temple and Joel Temple do. So I was most excited when I saw mention of this new series on their social media. And it arrived and I have read it and the small bee has read it and Chickpea has read it. And we have all given it 5 stars. I will read you the blurb.
Okay.
The Underdog Detective Agency has a proud tradition of sniffing out trouble, plus sniffing each other's butts. Of course, the small bee liked that bit.
Of course.
They're on a mission to catch Dogtown's elusive cat burglar, but if they want to crack this case, they're going to need help. Enter Fang. Letting a scruffy street cat join the Underdogs is a bold move, but sometimes you've got to risk it to get the dog biscuit. It's clever, isn't it?
I feel like there's dad jokes going on here, just quietly, but I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, it's clever. It's really, really funny, and I feel like Kate and Joel Temple do playful text just so well. But their books are also, I find, full of heart. They've often got great messages in them. They've always got offbeat characters. And they just do very, very clever, clever storytelling. I saw them at, I think it was Sydney Writers Festival a couple of years ago with one of their first books. And they were incredibly entertaining in real life as well. And I feel like from their social media, they would also be excellent author visits in schools or if you ever get to go to one of their book launches. So The Underdogs is, like I said, the first in a new series. it does say in the back of it, keep your eyes peeled for book two, Fake It Till They Make It. And it's for readers from 7+. The illustrations by Shiloh Gordon tell so much of the story and they add a real complexity to the overall production. So they do really encourage, force young readers to delve into the story through the illustrations. They'll make more meaning from the story if they're looking really closely at the illustrations. And I love that. I've spoken extensively online and all over the place about the power of graphic novels and about the power of visual literacy skills, and books like this series are perfect for increasing your child's visual literacy skills. This is a really good series for fans of Dog Man and Real Pigeons, and that is absolutely how I hooked the small bee in. He loves Dog Man and Real Pigeons, and so all I had to say was, oh my gosh, this is so Dog Man and Real Pigeons. He ripped through this one, but I think it will be reread many times over. We've talked about rereading before, and this is the sort of book that I think young readers would read over and over again because it's super funny and you won't get all of the jokes on the first reading, because like you said at the start, some of them are like dad jokes and sometimes but they're clever ones as well, and sometimes young readers will miss that on a first reading, but I feel like this is a series that they'll read over and over. And I know for Chickpea, who's now 10, she or 10 tomorrow, she still goes back and reads her Dog Man books and her Real Pigeons when a new one comes out. And I think that this is the sort of thing that will happen with the Underdogs. So I'm very, very excited about this new series. I also love that the cover artwork is like shades of black and this really, really bright blue. And it's got a neon sign. It's beautiful, beautiful design by Hardy Grant. I feel like they do good design.
I have to say, Kate and Joel, like this must be – is this their second or third one out this year?
They are so prolific.
They're so busy. It's amazing. Good on them. I say good on them.
Very prolific. The book trailer, which I will link in the show notes, is also worth having a look at. It's a good one. Next on my list is Just One Bee by Margaret Lamond and Anthony Bertini and illustrated by Christopher Nielsen. Now, this one is Just One Bee is so very fable-like. It is beautiful. And I feel like the co-author, and she's also the publisher, Margaret, does quirky fables and traditional tales incredibly well. And this one is absolutely no exception. I've sort of followed Margaret's books for many, many years, and she's just got this beautiful eye for the traditional tales, but making them contemporary as well. I love everything she publishes. Just One Bee is a story of hope, determination, and never giving up. The story of One Bee and her dream to revert desolate wasteland back to fields of flowers. But change is never easy, and another bee, known as Other Bee, is hoarding a single precious flower and a queen bee. But he refuses to believe that change is possible. Other Bee does all he can to quash One Bee's dream. But One Bee's persistence, patience, and optimism wins the day, if that's the right word, in the end. It's a really beautiful picture book for readers in primary school, but would also be a really good one to study in either upper primary or secondary for the visual literacy element of it and the sustainability elements of it. And there's a lot of – I've just realised there's a lot of One Bee, Other Bee, Small Bee, Smallest Bee, and Beekeeper and everything.
I just feel as though the bee thing is one of the cornerstone foundations of our entire podcast, really.
I know, but I feel like I always have to say this. To be fair, the bee thing in my life has very little to do with meeting the beekeeper.
I'm fully aware of that, but it just makes me laugh because when I think about our podcast, which is supposed to be about books and then overall is about bees, gardening, music. But that's good, right? Got it.
Everybody needs balance in their life.
Balance. Yeah. That's exactly right. Exactly right.
Back to my book. One Bee is a story which was inspired by the distressing observations about the growing disappearance of insects. And while I feel like this was definitely genesis for the story, in the mind of Anthony, or the other co-author, I also reckon that young activists like Greta Thunberg have also been worked into the words. It's got this real sense of you may be small, but you can do amazing things. And I love this sort of book for Chickpea, who, like we've talked about, loves nature and loves all things sustainability. And I find these are the sorts of books that I like to feed to her, because I think it's really important that our young people feel a sense of empowerment to be able to make change in the world, despite, you know, their young age. Now, this book was launched in Orange recently, and the artwork and the stories have then been installed in the Orange Botanical Gardens as a story walk. Yeah, some of you may have seen story walks over the years. It's like when we've done some of them up in Queensland, parts of the book or the whole book are reproduced in some material suitable for the outdoors, and you can walk around the gardens and read the story. There's also a Wiradjuri edition of 1B, Just 1B, now available, and it was translated to Wiradjuri by Auntie Elaine Lomas. Now, I was really hoping to have gone to Orange to see this story walk, but, you know, sadly COVID meant we did not go. But if you have seen the story walk, I would love to see some photos of it on social media. There was also a second launch of Just 1B. So often books have got more than one book launch, and the second launch of this one was at Admiralty House as guests of the Governor General and his wife, because he is an avid amateur a beekeeper. It's got really gorgeous end papers, beautiful illustrations with a really dystopian feel by Christopher Nielsen. I just think it's the perfect book for exploring issues of sustainability, persistence, and the power of dreaming big. Margaret, you have the most fabulous eye for the quirky and the beautiful. I, like I said, I just love everything she has ever been involved in.
Sounds amazing.
And then my third one, we will move up to young adult books with the 100 Remarkable Feats of Xander Mays by Clayton Zane Coomer. I have not yet read this one. Chickpea picked it out of the mail and wanted to read it.
I think it's a great title.
Oh, it's a brilliant
really
title.
Really good title. Yeah.
Yeah. So Chickpea is 10. So after I read the blurb, I was like, no, mate, not for you. But I have handed this one over to the teen who is 13. I will read you the blurb. Can a list save a life? Xander Mays loves lists and his grandmother is number one on his list of people I love most in the world. But now that Nana has stage 4 cancer, can a new list of 100 remarkable feats really save her? Particularly when his list contains difficult things like number 2, make a friend, number 3, make a best friend, plus number 10, kiss a girl, preferably Ali Collins, the girl of Xander's dreams. Funny, moving, and with a protagonist you can't help but fall in love with, 100 Remarkable Feats of Xander Mays is a book about never accepting the unacceptable, the power of lists, and one boy's unconditional love for his nana. Doesn't that sound brilliant?
It does. It does. And anything with a list involved. I need lists to function. Like we've talked about the fact that I forget everything, might forget birthdays and whatever. If I don't have a list, I just, you know, my day goes along in a dream and I achieve nothing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm exactly the same. I live my life by lists. And there's quite a few books which have got lists in them. The Coco Big City Kitty books are all about lists. They're for much, much, much younger readers, from like 5. But there's lots of books with lists in them. Mm-hmm. And it just sounds fantastic. I'm really looking forward to reading it. And when I read the author's bio, I was like, oh, I have got to read that. Listen to this. It says, Clayton Zane Coomer is a writer from the south coast of New South Wales who has held many varied roles, including a lawyer, optical dispenser, club DJ, creative writing tutor, and saxophonist in a Chinese restaurant. His varied roles eventuated in him opening a boutique bookstore, cafe, wine bar, where he is the licensee, book curator, occasional DJ, and head dishwasher. I mean, come on.
Where is this place? I must find it.
I think it's
like that. Just sounds like my kind of place.
I think it might be overseas. I know.
Oh no, really?
Can we open one of them?
Yeah, we'll call it Your Kids Next Read.
The bar
and serve gin. It's gonna be great.
That's such a great bio. I love it that people have done super interesting things in their life.
Oh yeah, it's in. Oh no, it's in Kiama.
No.
It is. I can go. It's up the road.
Oh, well, now I'm not talking to you.
I'll be going.
I can't go anywhere.
I'm going without you. Well, maybe, you know, when you finally come to visit me and, you know, for a Shoalhaven Readers and Writers Festival or something, we'll go together. We can get Clayton involved. He'll have to have us.
He will. We can do an event there.
We can do an event.
We're just organising it on his behalf.
Exactly. I'm sure he'll love it. That sounds great. And I hope that the book goes really well. You'll have to let us know what the team thinks of it.
I will indeed.
Sounds good. All right. Now, you have rustled together our bingo question this week because you have been paying attention to the Your Kids Next Read Facebook community. Because you're good like that. And what you have come up with here is a question that has come straight out of that group. So perhaps you would like to tell us.
Now, let's just backtrack because, to be fair, I do very little else in the Your Kids Next Read book except occasionally ask questions myself and comment. It is you and Alison, Alison Tate, Alison Rushby. It is Alison Rushby and yourself, Alison Tate, who do most of the admin for that group. You allow everybody in, you check everybody, you moderate the comments. You guys do so much of the work because my life is just so out of control. So to be fair, let's just
But you were paying attention at this particular point, which is great. And it is a question. So the bingo questions, just for anyone who's tuning in for the first time, the bingo questions are questions that come up regularly in the Your Kids Next Read group. The kind of question where if we gave you a bingo card with these questions on them, you would basically probably be able to fill it up pretty much every week or every fortnight or so, because that's how regular these questions are. Now, this particular question is one that does come up regularly, but, you know, I think just recently, and maybe because of the time of year it is or something, I'm not sure, has been a regular. So you've picked up on that and now here you are. So. Yes. Talk us through it. What's the question?
Best special occasion gift books beyond The Places You'll Go and Fairy Tale Anthologies. And this one really spoke to me because I do – I found it amusing and slightly – annoying is the wrong word. I just used to think, oh, come on, really? When somebody would have a baby and I would see, I've been in bookshops where people have been buying The Very Hungry Caterpillar, R.I.P., Eric Carle, beautiful man, and things like The Places You'll Go by Dr. Seuss for babies, because I've always deliberately not purchased those titles because I think, well, you don't want to end up with five copies of them. Mm. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what I think are really great special occasion gift books for quite young children, and I'll hand over to you for older kids. Now, the first book that I was ever given when I had Pudster so many years ago, 13 years ago, was Puffling, written by Margaret Wilde and illustrated by Julie Vivas. It was given to me by the wonderfully talented and amazing, all-round amazing, very dear friend, Trish Buckley. I cried when I opened it up and read the inscription. It was the most beautiful inscription, and I think I've got it linked, a photograph of her inscription somewhere on Children's Books Daily, my website. But, you know, look, and to be fair, I had a baby, hadn't slept for 3 days, and my baby would not stop crying. But I still tear up every time I read her inscription and I read that book because it is such a gorgeous book to give as a welcome to the world present. Mm. And it's on my list of best books to give to babies, which I will link in the show notes. It's sometimes available and it's sometimes not. And that's the first thing that I want to say. If you ever find a book which is just perfect for a particular occasion, and you think there will be more of those occasions happening in your life, like births of babies, buy up big at the time. So I bought about 10 copies of Puffling in hardcover when there was a reprint done at one stage, and I gave those. I also used to buy a book called Little Blue by Gay Chapman, which I have talked about previously on the podcast. I used to buy that whenever I saw it. It is now completely out of print to the point that, I know of friends that have bought secondhand copies on buy, sell, swap pages, but, you know, do buy the books when you see them and stockpile them for the day when you need to give them. Some books that I'm going to recommend for giving to babies for Welcome to the World gifts are This Small Blue Dot by Zeno Swarder. That is just the most stunning book to give to a newborn baby or to give to a child who has just, I was going to say received a sibling, had a sibling come into their life. Now, Zeno also has prints of that book and other books that you can purchase through his website. And I think that that as well is a really meaningful bookish gift to give. So a print either from the book or one of his other prints with the book. I think a piece of artwork is, you know, very bookish, particularly if it's an illustration, of course, and that's a really beautiful thing to give as well. Welcome Baby by Jess Ratcliffe is another one that I have been stockpiling as a Welcome to the World gift. And A Boat of Stars, which is a poetry anthology edited by Margaret Connolly and Natalie Jane Pryor, is one that I purchased quite a few of in hardcover because, as we spoke about, I think it was last week on the podcast, Natalie Jane Pryor talks in my book, Raising Readers, about the power of poetry. And she suggests giving poetry anthologies as newborn gifts. And A Boat of Stars is very much, Margaret Connolly is an early childhood expert, and that book is all early childhood poetry, and it is absolutely beautiful for an early childhood audience. For readers around 7 years of age, I've been giving many copies of The Secrets of Magnolia Moon by Edwina Wyatt. She is the author illustrator of that book because it is just this beautiful hardcover, completely giftable, gorgeous book. And I love a hardcover book as a special gift because I think obviously they last longer. And I also really like the Coco Big City Kitty books for that same reason. And I've spoken about those on the podcast before as well. Sometimes I will give a set of books as a special occasion gift. So some years ago, I gave about 5 of the Nature Story books, books by Walker Books to a child who was turning 6 or 7, I can't remember, and they were massive, massive nature lovers. And I think a set of books is a really nice thing to give to a young child. In that same vein, I like the Explore Your World books by Tim Flannery. They are hardcovers and they are very giftable. And then I also sometimes give cookbooks. I've given lots of copies of Donna Hay Kids Cookbook away and also 10 Pomegranate Street. Because, again, I just like to give something that will always be kept but won't date and is possibly hardcover. And I just looked up at my shelf, actually, and somebody gave me a gift book not that long ago, which I have just loved. And I purchased a few copies of this one for teenagers. It's called The Bird Within Me by Sarah Lundberg, and it's a beautiful hardcover book based on the paintings, letters, and diaries of a Swedish artist called Berta Hansen. And it's this gorgeous story for all ages. I enjoyed it as an adult, but probably from about the age of 13. It's really beautiful. I mean, exquisite endpapers, and the artwork is sublime. And it's a very sad story of grief, but it is the most beautiful book and one that you would keep as a coffee table book and very much keep forever and probably reread. What about you? Do you give books?
That one sounds amazing. I'm going to have to have a look at that. Yes, I do give books. So I don't tend to think of gift books though. I tend to think of them as a book that's a gift. So I'm always looking at the person rather than thinking, oh, they're 7 and I'm looking for a special book. I look at the person and try to find, like, it's, you know, and I guess I'm lucky in the sense that I have a wide knowledge of what's out there and what's coming and all of those sorts of things. So I'm looking for something that's really going to suit the person that I'm giving it to. So particularly with older kids, I think it's quite important to do that. If you don't want your book to end up in the 6-monthly cull,
absolutely,
or left behind when they move house, or
you want it to be meaningful, don't you?
You want it to be something that they're going to, you know, treat as a keepsake. I think it's important to really get something that's suitable. And I think you are right about hardcovers. I think looking for something that is that feels weighty, like it feels like something you put thought into. It feels like a beautiful object in itself, I think is a really, really great thing to do. I mean, you know, you talked about the places you'll go as something that people give for babies. It's also, I think, a great gift for 18-year-olds.
Mm.
It's a great gift for people who are leaving school and, you know, just as a reminder that there's a whole world out there for them and, you know, they can do what they like with it sort of thing. I think it's a great one for them. But like when it comes to like Book Boy, for instance, he has a great interest in poetry. So I will always look for a gorgeous edition of either a poet that I think he should read or a poet that he does love that he doesn't have that particular kind of version of. Or I actually searched out for him last year a copy of the Norton Anthology of Poetry, which is a heavily, you know, I had it at university, and I think in the end I did end up buying a secondhand copy of someone's, you know, uni version from 1987, because it's such a huge range of all different types of poetry, and I just knew that he would get something out of it. You know, to buy it new, I think it's something like $180.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to go searching for a copy that was affordable and that, you know, that, because it's also the kind of thing that, yes, he will keep it, but he's not going to be reading it every night.
No.
So it's not something he'll do. I look for him for books about songwriting because he writes songs. There is a fantastic book for if you've got someone in your life who's interested in music. It's called Songwriters on Songwriting. It's edited by Paul Zollo, Zollo, and it's a whole bunch of, you know, the world's best songwriters talking about how they write songs. Like it's you know, and it's as a gift for someone like him, it's a fantastic present, you know. And the other thing that I have been buying him for because of his age, because he's in year 12 this year, but also because of his interest, is cookbooks. He is moving out, you know, at some point, you know, I'm not exactly sure when, he tells me tomorrow, but that's probably not going to happen. but he's moving out. So I am looking for things that will, you know, give him easy, wholesome meals, you know, in not particularly large portions, because that's the other thing, you know, you want something that's going to be.
You don't need the slow cooker, you know, Woman's Weekly slow cooker book, which will serve 20.
Don't, that's right. And just looking for things, like over the years I've given him lots of different ones. Like he quite likes Jamie Oliver. So, you know, I look for that sort of thing. He likes Italian food. I'm looking for simple Italian stuff. So I look for cookbooks, and I actually think cookbooks for that age group is something that we could do a list and a completely separate conversation on, because, you know, there's a lot out there that's marketed to that age group.
But yeah, there is.
When you actually get in and read the books, they're not necessarily what, you know, like if you've got an interest in food, they're too simple.
Yes.
If you know if you know how to make a spaghetti, they're too simple. But, you know, so that's probably a conversation for another day. So those are the ones I get him. The other thing I got him last year as a gift, just because, and I think sometimes gifts just because are the best ones, is The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse by Charlie Maxey, which is just a gorgeous, beautiful book.
Amazing book.
Amazing book. And you could give that to any age. I would be giving that one to any age. For Book Boy Junior, I don't often buy him book gifts because he's not someone who necessarily is, you know, that's what he's looking for. But I bought him the hardcover. There was a beautiful version of it that came out last year. And it's the hardcover version, a young adult the young adult adaptation of Laura Hillenbrand's Unbroken, which is the story of an Olympian, but who had been in the war and had been sort of shot down over enemy territory and, you know, ended up becoming an Olympian. And it's quite an extraordinary story. And he has really enjoyed that. So it's a hardcover book. It's the kind of thing that you would keep for a long time. So
yeah,
it has survived.
I think hardcover is key, isn't it?
I think so. And it's survived the cull. Like when he culled his bookshelf, he held on to it. So that's a good sign, right? I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, and sometimes they might not read them at the time. That's the other thing you have to remember. Like I remember when when I explained to the beekeeper that from henceforth our children would be giving books as gifts. I remember the small bee and the smallest bee being like, oh, but our friends won't like them. I'm like, yes, they might not like them on the day, boys, but their parents will appreciate the lack of plastic and they will love them and they will think of you every time they read them. So we now do give to all small people and adults books as gifts and honey, given we have access to both of those things. And, you know, that has to be said, I think. They may not always be the most exciting gift to get on the special occasion, but they are ones that you will come back to time and time again. And just on the secondhand books, I was looking up at my bookshelf as you were speaking. I have for many, many years collected old A.A. Milne books, which are now no longer in print. So Winnie the Pooh, but also his poetry. And I used to work for many years. I worked at the Lifeline Book Fest. And I did that purely, well, look, no, I did it out of the goodness of my own heart, of course, but also because I was collecting secondhand copies of A.A. Milne books. And the beekeeper collects he spends far too much time on eBay, far too much time collecting old apiarist beekeeping books, which are now no longer in print, as well as old honey tins. That's a story for another day. But I think that secondhand books can be something that, you know, a lot of work goes into finding and sourcing those books, but they can be really meaningful. Yeah.
I'm just a bit stuck with this vision of you at the Lifeline Book Fair with your here I am doing good charitable work kind of face on, but also with a beady eye out. Every man for himself. Oh, that's funny. All right, let's move on to our quick tips for this week. Now, I'm going to talk about a question that I get asked by kids a lot, and I am going to rely a little bit on my friends for some help with this one. But I often get asked by kids how you know when your writing is good. Like, how do you know when what you've done is good? Is usually good enough is the actual phrase that they give me. And, of course, my first question to them at that point is good enough for what? Because it's all about, like, what's the purpose of the writing that you're doing and what is it that you're hoping to get out of it? And usually they will say to me that they've written a novel, they're 12, they've written a novel and they want to get it published, and how will they know when it's good enough? And so then, of course, we have to apply a whole different set of parameters to it. But the thing I always say to them is that basically it doesn't matter what you're writing, it doesn't matter who you're writing it for, it doesn't matter what you're writing it for. Most of the time you won't think it's good enough. Like, most writers will tell you that they never know when their writing is good enough, and they still, even when they're in the middle of writing anything or they've finished writing anything, particularly when you're in the middle, I have to say, you generally think that it's the worst thing that anyone's ever written, because that's just how you feel. Because when you are writing something, you are putting something of yourself onto the page, you are putting something of yourself, you know, on display for other people to read, give you feedback on, and it's a very difficult thing to do, and you will never ever think that it's good enough, because if you are waiting for you to feel like it's good enough, chances are you will never submit it anywhere. You will never send it anywhere. You will never show it to anyone. It will sit in a cupboard or in your drawer and never be seen again. So you kind of have to push past that feeling of wondering, you know, of thinking it has to be perfect. It has to be, you know, an absolutely perfect piece of writing, or it's never going to be good enough for anything. Got to get past that. And most of the writers who are published are people who have pushed beyond that into, you know what, I'm just going to put it out there and have a go. Because that's when you're going to get published, or that's when you might, you know, win the prize for the short story competition, or that's when you might get that A that you're seeking in English, or whatever it is that you're trying to do, is when you push beyond that feeling of this is not good enough into I'm going to be brave and I'm going to submit this anyway and I'm going to see what happens. So I asked, I wrote a blog post on alisontate.com a couple of years ago where I went to a whole bunch of amazing authors, adult authors and authors for children, to ask them the question, like, how do you know? How do you know when your writing's good enough? And I got a couple of great responses that I'll share with you. So Nova Wheatman, who is a children's author that we talk about, we've actually mentioned, I was actually thinking about this the other day. This is actually the Nova Wheatman podcast because we do mention about her. We do talk about her very regularly. But she is one of the authors that I asked. And she says that she doesn't always know when her writing is good enough. So she...
Dude, she's Nova Wheatman.
She's Nova Wheatman, and she doesn't know. But what she does do is sends... Well, she says send off. We're talking about, you know, sending it to her publisher. She sometimes sends it before it's ready, but she sends it when she feels excited by it. So when she's excited by something, yes, even if it's not perfect, it's got something about it that makes her feel excited. And then she says, I've usually done a few drafts before I find that. So that's something that I always say to kids when I talk to them at school talks, is that you have to actually work through your writing a couple of times. You have to edit your work to really make it the best that it can be. So if you want it to be good enough, you have to at least have done some work to it. And then, as Nova says, you want to feel excited by it. So that's her tip. Belinda Morell, best-selling internationally published author of children's fiction, says, I'm never sure that it's good enough. So there you go, again, which is why I love deadlines, because at that point I just have to send it off. So that's another tip that I always give kids when I'm going to workshops and things like that. Aim for something, like aim for a competition, aim, you know, to kind of put a deadline on your work. And that way you have to send it. You have to get the feedback, because the best way to get better at writing is to practice and to get feedback and to actually apply that feedback. So I always really encourage kids who do like to write to enter those competitions, you know, and there are quite a few of them out there, and we do share
we do share
anything we see. We share in the Your Kids Next Read Facebook community. So if you've got kids who love to write, you know, be part of the community, because we will share anything we see, any competitions for kids that we see. And there's poetry competitions, there's short story competitions, lots of different things. Putting a deadline on things is a great way to get kids to move forward with their writing. And that's something that we often recommend. And Oliver Pomervan, who is an award-winning author of, you know, often very funny children's fiction, says that he knows when it's good enough when he reads it out loud. He reads the first page of whatever he's written out loud, and if he can hear the heart of the story beating
nice.
In that first page, then he knows that it's okay, it's ready to go, it's okay to send off. It's never going to be perfect. And I think that that's something that every writer needs to learn, no matter what age they are. It's never going to be perfect. So what you're aiming for is to push through that question of, is this good enough, to the point where I'm excited by this, I'm going to submit it somewhere just to see.
They are fantastic tips. And you're going to link that in the show notes.
I'm going to link that in the show notes, yes. What have you got for us in your quick tips?
Well, I'm going to continue with my sort of sustainability theme, in keeping with my review of Just One Bee, and sort of using books to provoke an interest in sustainability.
Oh, yeah. Great.
So chapter 11 of my book, Raising Readers, is all about sustainability and books. And Dr. Linda Logorman has a lovely piece in that chapter about the connection between art and books and sustainability, and she gives some tips on this. So Linda O'Gorman is a senior lecturer in the School of Early Childhood at QUT in Brisbane, and also one of my dearest friends. And her university teaching focuses on arts and sustainability education in early childhood and primary school contexts. And her research and writing also explores these topics. So she was a great person to have as a contributor to my book in this area. She also helped me with all errant apostrophes in the first draft of my book, Raising Readers, because Lyndall is, yeah, one of those people that understands where apostrophes go, unlike me. segue.
It's a whole nother story.
She sometimes sends me text messages which just have an apostrophe in them, and that means find the errant apostrophe in your latest social media post, Megan, you doofus.
I like her style.
Yeah, she's great. So tip one is, in my book she talks about how artwork in art galleries and picture books and even art on the street can help children to learn about the social and natural world and the challenge of living sustainably. So look all around you, but particularly use artwork to look at issues of sustainability and challenge yourself and the young people in your lives to look at them with that critical eye. She suggests that art can be a language for children to express their thoughts and feelings about big ideas, particularly around sustainability and the natural world. So art is always one of those things that I think really connects with young children. Tip two is nature journaling, which is something that I do with my own children. And I absolutely adore Trace Ballard's books for examples of nature journaling. And many, many of you will know Trace Ballard's books. And if you don't, do go and have a look at them. And I did a workshop some years ago now at the Story Arts Festival where I was meant to be like her minder, and I was meant to be supervising this workshop. And I ended up getting so entrenched and just loving what she was doing that I gave up on supervising children and I sat down and did this workshop and ignored all children. Fortunately, they were well behaved. But she talks about the power of nature journaling, and she always has a little notebook with her and just usually a pencil or sometimes one of those really gorgeous, I call them aqua pens. They're like a pen that you put water in and you use them with watercolor pencils. And you just sit down in nature and you just draw what you see, and you might write little notes, and you literally, it's a very mindful activity, so you'd probably not enjoy it, I'll take, but you just sit down, although you love gardening, so possibly you should try this. You just sit down and observe what you're seeing and draw it. And her books are done in that style. They are very much nature journals and they're beautiful. And tip three is to add books which on issues of sustainability which are important to you and your family. So it might be to do with composting or having a worm farm or a native beehive or whatever your particular interest in sustainability is. Because, you know, not all children have equal access to beautiful natural environments, but I really do feel very passionately that a keen interest in sustainability and in nature can be nurtured very early on in a child's life with the right books. Quality books can help to put the issues in context. You don't obviously want to scare young children, but they can be a real catalyst for positive change in ourselves and in our young children. They're really big concepts for young children to take on board, but I feel like kids very much understand about sharing the earth's resources, and research shows us, and people like Greta Thunberg show us, that children are very capable of taking action on issues of sustainability. So while not many children are necessarily going to fall in love with a dry nonfiction book about household recycling, they will really connect perhaps with a character who's on a bit of a challenge or a mission to make her mother's recycling in the house a little bit better. Or so stories and emotion stick in the minds of young children. So if you're really wanting to encourage your child to help out with the composting or something like that, then I would encourage you to find a book which has got a fictional element to it, but also then some obviously non-fiction information, because stories stick in the minds of children and in the minds of adults better than a dry non-fiction book. So I have lots of lists on my website, Children's Books Daily, about books to do with sustainability. I did a post fairly recently on Earth Hour, for Earth Hour, and I've got a large list on that post about some of the latest books, which I think are really must-haves for piquing an interest in issues of sustainability. And I'll just mention a few here. I particularly like the Eco Rangers series by Candice Lemon Fox, which is exactly what I just said. It is young children taking action, and it's a fiction book, but it's got really great issues around sustainability, but the characters pull the child through the story. They're junior nonfiction ones, really fantastic. Chickpea really enjoyed those ones, and any child I've given to has enjoyed them. Rather than me handing them a book on and saying this is a book about oil being spilled into the ocean and, you know, how appalling that is, you know, I was handing them a book which had a great engaging story and some kids taking action to solve some of these problems. Your Planet Needs You by Philip Bunting. And I mean, hello, what is not to love about Philip Bunting? But I particularly like Your Planet Needs You. And Iceberg by Claire Saxby and Jess Ratcliffe. Oh my gosh. Told from the perspective almost of an iceberg. It's just the most stunning story about that environment. So they're just three that I'll mention. But if you look on my website, Children's Books Daily, and I'll link them in the show notes, I've got lots of books on sustainability. So that's me done for top tips.
Fantastic. I think our tips are getting less quick, but more exciting every week.
They're never going to be quick, were they?
when you said earlier, you know, you speak extensively on something or other, I felt like you could have just stopped right at speak extensively. Actually, we both could. Let's face it.
Just on that, the beekeeper and I were discussing the other day, because he talks more than I do, if you can believe that. And he was saying we need to have like a word, like, or something that we do when either of us is talking too much. Because he was like, oh, you really overtalked the other night at something. And I looked at him and I was like, are you kidding me? Because you were on that panel a few weeks ago, dude. I was sitting in the audience going, okay, stop now. So we've like decided.
Like we've a got safe word. You need a safe word.
Safe word. Okay, it's time to stop now.
No. All right. So that's us for the week. You will, of course, find all of the various books and things that we've talked about in our show notes at yourkidsnextread.com. We would love to have you join us and our other co-founder Alison Rushby in the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. And you will, of course, find all of our books, if you are in Australia, at booktopia.com.au in the Your Kids Next Read section. With a section. It's very exciting. So what are you up to until we meet again?
I am going to spend the rest of today sorting birthday cakes. So as mentioned earlier, Chickpea and the Small Bee have a combined birthday party on Saturday or Sunday, I can't remember. And Chickpea does not like cake. So she is a cheese connoisseur, and she will be having a cake that is a cheesecake, but not as you think of it. It is layers of like camembert and brie and wheels of cheese, basically, which will then be decorated with dried fruit and
how many
nuts.
Wheels of cheese will she be having?
Quite a lot. I've been off to Panisi's at Woolloongabba and purchased their large wheels for the bottom. So it will look sort of like a tiered wedding cake, but it will be cheese. And then that
We're going to need a photo of the cheesecake.
I've done it for her once before and she loved it, but she was really devastated years ago when we did it. I think it was like for her fifth birthday and we did this for her friend's party, and she's never had a friend's party since, because she was like, all of my friends said it was weird not to have like cupcakes. And I was like, it's okay. You can be a cheese lover. You don't have to worry about what your friends like. You don't like cupcakes. So she is having a cake made out of cheese, and the Small Bee is completely enamored with all things chocolate cake, which we are not, I have to say. The girls and I are not, but chickpeas. No, we're not actually massive chocolate cake fans, but the Small Bee is like, he's completely obsessed with chocolate cake. And so Chickpea is actually cooking his birthday cake. She makes an exceptional chocolate cake, even though she won't eat it herself. So she's making his chocolate cake.
Sounds very industrious.
Oh, we'll, very industrious.
We'll be having, well, we'll be having the builder's birthday. He'll be having cake. He's an absolute cake lover. Also a cheese lover. Maybe I'll do both. Yeah. So I'm not sure if I'm, given my current situation, if I'll be making a cake or if I'll just be, you know, buying one. Yeah, I might be buying a cake. But we also have the joy of the school play to attend. which is actually occurring on his birthday.
Lucky him.
I know. I said, it's on for a couple of nights. And I said to him, so we could go on your actual birthday or we could go a different night. And he just looked at me like, he goes, so I'd be spending my birthday at the high school play. And I'm like, you know, there's worse places to spend it. And he was like, I'm trying to think of some and I can't. Anyway, so I'm not exactly sure how that's going to roll yet, whether we'll be going on the day or not. But those two things will be the focus of my week this week.
They sound fantastic.
See, art, cake, can't go wrong really, can you? All right, everyone, thank you so much and we will see you next time.
That we will.